Kent is wearing the Oprah mic this morning.
I'm playing Oprah.
And Kent wanted to play the role of Oprah. And so we are going to have we don't know how it's going to turn out, which is fun. We've met a few times and we keep saying, hey, let's not talk too much. We want this to happen on Sunday. So we're here. It's going to be wild. And the topic, it's a branch out just to get you even a little more uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Sexuality.
Oh, yeah. Oh. This is really loud. This is Jason. Jason is married to his better half, Emily, who's an RD at Whitworth. Jason started an organization. Some of you have met Jason. He's gone to schools and worked for iPulse and is now starting an organization called Project 619. What's 619 stand for?
It comes from the exhortation that Paul gave to Timothy in the first letter, 1 Timothy 6:19, that says, take hold of life that's truly life.
All right. And Jason does a lot of talking both in the Christian world and in the public sector on the issues of sexuality and particularly teenage sexuality. So turn to Matthew chapter 5 because we're going to get there. And let me do a little review. Last week, Ryan brought us into a series we're doing on the Pharisees, Jesus' confrontation with the Pharisees. And I loved what you said last week, Ryan, because to Jesus and his message, the religious were the most dangerous part of getting in the way of Jesus' story. It wasn't the sinners. And I loved that because for most of us, it's not the Muslims, it's not the drug lords, it's not the Democrats, or it's not Obama, or it's not Perry, or it's not Flo Rida, or whatever. It's the religious. I just threw out Flo Rida. So here's the thing that I want us to do as we jump into this section. We are the religious. And as much as we dislike that, at some level it forces us, when Jesus confronts the Pharisees, to have to take a second glance at ourselves and ask ourselves, are we in the way of what Jesus wants to do? So we're going to look at this chapter 5 of Matthew. It's the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus is kind of correcting all of these, what he calls the laws of Moses, which the Pharisees were espousing again and again and people were following. And here's what's crazy. Jesus, in this section, kind of puts himself in the place of Moses and basically says, I'm the new Moses. You've heard it said, you know, hate your enemies, or an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. I say, pray for those who persecute you. And he just goes on, and it sets himself up as the only one, because all the Jews realized Moses is the man, and the Pharisees were saying, yeah, we're following in his suit. And Jesus was saying, no, I'm changing and completing all of the law of the prophets. And this was going to bug the Pharisees, and it might have bugged a lot of people that were gathering around. And what we're going to look at today is pretty apropos for our culture. We're going to talk about sexuality, and it's apropos because we live in a culture of high divorce. Every one of us probably knows somebody who's been divorced, or maybe you've grown up in a divorced home. High infidelity. I can't tell you how many people that I know, friends of mine, who've jumped into this world and it's broken stuff up. And adultery, and we live in a culture where we use sex to sell everything. So here is the verse we're going to look at. And in fact, it's Matthew chapter 5, verse 27. Here's what it says. You've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off, throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. So here's the first thing we're going to do. We're going to turn around or turn to those next to you. Here's the question you're going to discuss for about 3 or 4 minutes, maybe 5. What is Jesus trying to get across right here? On your mark, get set, go. Okay, kind of wrap up where you're at here a little bit. And Catherine, where are you? Catherine, come up here or into the middle. You have a microphone, right? So here's what's going to happen. Somebody give me, from this section right over here, right where Catherine is. Stop right there, Catherine. You have a mic, right? Somebody over there, what did you talk about? And Catherine, if no one stands up, just hand the mic to somebody. Somebody, what's Jesus trying to get across here? Somebody over here, what did you guys talk about? Right over here. Anybody?
Good, very good.
Okay, here's somebody right here. Come right here. Thank you, very brave soul. Give her a hand for you, the first one to stand up.
Not that I want the recognition.
You guys got to know, this is very nerve-wracking in church, so I'm not surprised that you're stymied and frozen. But
not that I want the recognition or anything, but I guess to start with that, even if you have the thought, you know, it's just like if you're even looking at someone in that way, you've already committed the adultery or the crime or the sin, because it starts in our hearts, it starts in our minds, even if we never speak it or act it out, it's already in us. And then kind of mentioned also, it seems crazy harsh about gouging your eye out and throwing it away, but apparently, for one, he's pretty serious, and two, because maybe it's just going to consume you. If you don't get rid of it, if you don't stop it right now, you're going to be consumed by it.
So this idea that it starts, that this idea that he was blowing up this idea of sin just being outward, you're saying that he was talking about something going on in the mind. All right, wander around here, Catherine. Somebody else want to add anything to this? Yeah, over here. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so we talked about how it starts in the first thought.
You can hear her, right?
You can't control your first thought. We're human beings, we're sinners. If your first thought is hard for us to control, we can control our second thought, any thought that we have after that. So if our thoughts become our actions or our words become our results, and we continue that cycle, if we're not controlling our thoughts, the outcome can be really bad.
Okay,
so
the thoughts control the outcome.
Because your thoughts become your actions and your words. And if you speak them, they're going to become your results. And your results become your destiny.
Okay.
So the part I had a tough time with was, okay, so in my mind, if I'm allowing that thought, am I going to cut out my brain? Like, in such a literal sense, like, what do you do with that? Because, you know, you're cutting off a limb or you're gouging out an eye. That really confused the heck out of me.
Okay. We'll maybe talk about that. Anybody else want to add a comment here? Over here? Oh, wait, back over there, right over there. Sorry.
I think the second part really bothers all of us in our group of four, too, and trying to just understand what does that mean, you know, and I think everybody talked a little bit about the Pharisees being so outwardly focused, and then this idea that, well, we all have an inward that is where the darkness happens or ignites.
Right.
And then I think it causes us somewhat to go outside of this passage and go, Christ covers everything somehow. And the seriousness of cutting things out, like it might be right for me to completely get to where I don't think certain thoughts, that those thoughts get completely cut out of my life. So how do I do that?
All right. And then one other up here. Emily, go ahead. Just stand up. Might take a while. Ooh. So here's the deal. Okay, we're going to hold on here for a minute because this raises a bunch of stuff like at what point does natural sexual attraction, right? It's natural, right? It better be. I mean, where we got a problem. And then when does it turn into something? Okay, we got a lot to talk about here. So maybe I would say this. Pastor Men. Here? Oh, we have three white males up here, by the way.
Sorry about that.
That's weird. We actually thought about it about a week ago, and we said, we're idiots. I tried to get my wife up here. She said no. So what is Jesus trying to get across? Or what comments do you want to make to this? Maybe I would say this. When does natural human desire becomes something that Jesus says is bad enough to maybe gouge it out.
Thank you, Pastor.
Developing leaders right here in front of you.
Well, I find it ironic that this is one of the few places that Jesus actually speaks as closely as we will get in Scripture from him saying anything with regards to sex or sexuality or desire.
Right.
And it's this passage and the one that follows it in the Sermon on the Mount with regards to divorce are really one of the only few that allow for us to have an understanding of where he stands on this issue. For me, this is a hard one, just in the fact that I for so long have been a Pharisee, and I would still, it's so easy. The default mode of my heart is one of rules. I like rules, and so I can easily say I'm never going to commit adultery, but for the second part to come into play is a whole nother way of thinking. And I think really one of the things that I think about in this whole passage is this one of even isolation. So often that second thought, what it does is it places us in a moment of isolation. Because in our mind, we're going a particular path, a particular place, but we've now isolated ourselves because most often that is not a thought that we're going to openly share with anyone else and engage in. And it allows for really the darkness of that, or the isolation of that sin, to become manifested in my life in a way that could become a result, or...
I mean, you could act on it.
Could act upon it, yeah. Or I see it as something that over time, more and more of those thoughts allow for more and more secret in your life.
Okay, so here's the question then. This bugs me a little bit. Yeah. Because maybe you would ask this: I think Jesus is wrong. I don't think thinking in your mind is the same as acting it out.
Right. Couple. Yeah.
Okay, I mean. Oh wait.
Yes.
Did you record that last statement? Take that off.
I think Jesus is wrong.
I'm questioning.
We're gonna put that
what
on a
Jesus
loop.
Is trying to say.
Every time Kent speaks,
I think Jesus is wrong.
That's all we hear. That's those little sound bites that make politicians.
Go down. Don't ever run, please, for multiple reasons. Two things. One,
Ken says Jesus is wrong.
I think we often question this whole idea of when does the natural desire, when does this thing that's natural and even good go to something bad? And I think we've mentioned it here before, but we get really caught up on that. And I haven't met too many people, if anyone, who don't know when that happens. And I think we want to excuse when it happens by coming up with external ways to judge when it happens. So we have a lot of, it's the third look where it really becomes a sin, or the second one, or if the first one's over 5 seconds.
Yeah, we had a thing in college where you couldn't look in the rearview mirror. If you did, you had to pay $1.
Everyone knows. Some people can look at someone for whatever, I don't know how long. That's weird. But you know when it crosses this boundary. I think that's why we have a conscience. Mm-hmm. But as far as this whole, I do love this question, right? Really, do any of us believe that looking at a woman and thinking things is the same consequentially as actually carrying out your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, for instance.
If
I said to you, hey, on the way here, I looked in the rearview mirror at a woman running and I lusted. I could probably still sit up here, right? But if I said to you, hey, just before I came here, committed adultery.
Right. Probably wouldn't be up here.
I probably would not be up here.
Probably.
It's just not the same.
Not the same. So, but that does bring up, I actually think this is a critical, I think it is a critical point. And I think if we're talking Pharisees, you have to imagine that Pharisees first heard this and they were stunned by it. Because all the Pharisees were ever concerned about was the action.
Right.
They were always concerned about it. And to me, this is incredibly critical. Because all we're generally more concerned with is the action. And I think Jesus is making a pretty clear statement that actually, maybe, God has always been more concerned about the heart than the action. And in reality, there's this damage to the soul, damage to this inner self, damage to this inner being, that grieves God as much as the action. And Jesus is, in a sense, blending these together, and I think saying, you know, Pharisees, yeah, you've always been really concerned with, oh, that Kent actually didn't have the affair on the way to church, which we should be concerned with. But I think he's also saying, but you know what God's always been more concerned with is the heart, actually, right, and that inner self and those inner thoughts. And that's a pretty massive transformation, especially if you're a Pharisee hearing that for the first time, I would think.
Yeah.
And even for us.
Well, it was interesting because the word lust is not necessarily, we translate it, the word in Greek is epithymeo, which isn't necessarily a negative word. It really just means a strong desire. And you can actually use it for a healthy, natural sexual attraction or whatever. The key, I was looking at this, the key...
So you can lust your wife, just for those of you who are wondering.
Well, yeah. But I mean, the key... But
I always wondered that when I was a college student. I'm just informing you students who are wondering that right now.
But the key was the little preposition, Ryan, prior to the word epithymeo, which is this little preposition called pro to, which is, it's a little... And this is everything in the whole verse. It means in order to or for the purpose of. So what Jesus was saying in this idea of the look or the stare, it's not that we can't look and be naturally attracted to somebody or you know, we never can turn off our sexuality. We are sexual creatures. The issue is when you're looking at somebody for the purpose of desiring something you shouldn't have and actually fulfilling that with a person, that is what becomes a sin. Which is interesting.
Yeah, I you made a great point there, and I think it's important as we're in this discussion, because there's always the whisper when we like our sexuality or those words that are being used, and we can so easily with this verse say that it's bad to have sexual desire.
Right.
And I think it's really important to be able to say no. Sexual desire is a given gift to us. There is a reason for that desire. And it can go either astray or it can lead us down a path that is glorifying. And we so often in church, we start saying words like sex or sexuality and we freak out. Like it's like, ooh, like, right? Like there's whispering, it's weird, but it's important. And even in this verse, as we're struggling through this, that we also recognize the beauty of the desire that God has placed within us for sex.
Well, because there's issues that Puritans have been wrongly sort of accused for being shamed about sexuality or whatever, but there is a tendency in Christianity to, like you were almost getting at this a little bit, Emily, saying that, oh, if I have any natural desire for a boyfriend, and it's I better cut it out. And I think it's as simple as hate is kind of beyond righteous anger. Theft is beyond, you know, kind of admiring something. And the same way, lust is beyond normal human desire.
Yeah,
right?
And I would even add, I mean, from my own experience, I remember this. I remember passages like this that I would read, and I would think, well, then I have to get rid of that desire. And I remember praying prayers where it was like, Lord, please take away my sexual desire.
Well, the early church believed if you had sex with your wife for any other reason but to procreate, it
was
a sin.
Augustine, but yeah.
Oh, a lot. I have a lot of quotes I could have brought here.
Well, and Origen actually castrated himself.
Yeah, so it's a slippery slope that way, too. Oh, my gosh, I'm lusting my wife here. This is bad. God forgive
early
me.
Early church fathers, they struggled with this, right? I mean, one even said, you know, if the fall hadn't happened, we would have reproduced ourselves by some harmless mode of vegetation.
Like frogs or something?
Or like flowers. Bloop, there's another one, right? Like... I don't know how that works, but
that would be awful.
But I mean, I think that I've been in that place where I've prayed for that desire to go away, thinking that on my wedding day, I would see my bride, and all of a sudden, there was this thing that just like popped in as soon as I said, I do, right? It's like, I do. Ah, whoa. I have never seen you that way before.
What's with the ah, whoa?
And so I think that we can get lost in that, and we can easily think that desire is a bad thing. And I love the way that you brought up the translation of that.
Right.
Because there is a struggle in that we have to be able to work through.
Yeah. I mean, one of the challenges I think, and we were talking about this a little bit, it's funny when we do these little dialogue things, we always say, don't say too much, you know. But one of the things that's interesting, when you think about who would have been gathered listening to Jesus talk about this, it would have been married men, because women were very seldom allowed to listen to rabbinical teaching and be there, and they would have been married. And one of the challenges that I think we face is that you were married by 16, between 16 and 20, if you're a woman married earlier, but you were married pretty young. And I think the challenge we face as I think about this in our day is, what does it mean for us in a culture which is extended adolescence? The average age of marriage is 26.5 or whatever. We've extended adolescence and increased sexual temptation in our culture. This is a hard issue for us. And maybe I would ask this. How do you think the church has done with this?
So that's the big question, right? Which we all know the answer to. The church has done a phenomenal job of convincing the mind that it's wrong. In fact, 76... Wow. Let's just go with that. 76. That sounds better anyway. 76.
That's as weird as Jason's woo-hoo-hoo thing.
That wasn't that weird.
That was a little weird.
His was way more weird. 76% of evangelicals believe sex before marriage is wrong. And it's really important to start with that stat, I think, because it's really easy to throw around a lot of stats about evangelicals having sex before marriage. We have to start here. The mind, full on, it's wrong. But 80% of unmarried 18 to 29 evangelicals have had sex before marriage. So, it's not working, obviously. We can believe all we want with the mind, and we've talked about it. I mean, the gut, the inner self, the heart isn't being convinced of something. Which leads, I mean, this stat leads to a lot of other stuff. Jason sent me one. Evangelicals, their first sexual encounter is earlier than non-evangelicals. So, not only we believe it's wrong, but then the majority of us do it. The majority of us do it earlier than the non-Christians, and 65% of abortions in America are from women who call themselves Protestant or Catholic. So we end up actually having more abortions than the world as well. So again, if there's ever a time to come back to this whole thing of, oh, they're ruining everything, let's look inward first. Seems to be that we have a problem here, and Jason can probably talk. I sometimes make fun of Jason a little bit, but because I know some of you thought this. Project 619, like, oh, is this the guy that goes around asking for virgin pledges and stuff, virginity pledges and purity rings? And some of those are great. I'm not bashing them, but let's be honest, Jason. Those things don't seem to be doing anything at all.
Yeah, what have you found? What has the church tried, and has it? What have you seen success in it? Because you've looked at all these things.
Yeah, I've walked in it. I've heard the discussions. We've had a probably about two decades strong of really a powerful conversation around controlling the mind, behavior modification. A lot of don't. So we've had true love waits. Maybe that's something that you've heard. Or silver ring thing. I don't know. But the heart of it has always been that with this pledge you're now committing.
A purity ring.
Purity ring or a commitment or we've done things. And please hear me. These are not necessarily bad things, but these are things that we've tried. We've really, in all of them, whether it be with the purity cards or with the silver ring thing or purity rings, we've done all of these different attempts to really control behavior, to say, I am not going to have sex until I am married. That has been the gist. That has been the hope. The heart has been, if we can control the mind, we will control the action.
Okay, hold on to that thought, because here's what I want to do. I want to go back to your little talking peep friends, and here's the question. Why, in your opinion, maybe this, twofold, what has the church tried, maybe what you've heard of, they've done, or maybe you've been a part of something like this, and why doesn't it seem to be working, in your opinion? All right? Is that a good, that's a good question. What has the church tried? What have you seen that the church has tried? Maybe you've been a part of something. And why, in your opinion, do you think it isn't working? On your mark, get set, go. Okay. Catherine, you have a microphone. Maybe, if you, do we need a microphone? If we talk loud, can you guys hear? Okay, so, right here in over in this section, what did you guys talk about? One reason why this doesn't work. What did you guys talk about right in here? Anybody? One reason. Yes. Molly, thank you. What have you heard, and what's one reason? Okay, so you're talking about a couple of things. One reason that we don't do this, we never talk about this, like in this context, and even though so your opinion is we just don't talk about it, and we don't know who to go to about it, with it, okay? Okay, so you've hit another thing. Not only has the church not talked about it, they've treated it as if it's the sin of all sins. Like you do this sin, you know, almost like they may be taking some of what Jesus said at the end. Hey, Jesus said some pretty big things, right? If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. You don't want to go to, he used the word hell. You don't want to, if you're better to lose part of your body, then your whole body go to hell. Okay, and we're going to comment on this a little bit, that statement, but thank you. Yeah, Jack. I don't know if that's on. Is that on? Yeah, go ahead.
They don't really know, like, why or... Yeah, there's just no why to it, you know, really. They've just heard this, like, oh, okay, well, I'm a Christian. Now I should take my abstinence pledge, you know?
Okay.
And then they feel like that's the next logical step, but there's no, like, well, why? Why should I do that? And
okay.
Then so eventually they get to a point where it's like, well, why are you not doing it? It's like, oh, I don't really know. I just did it. That's it.
So the church doesn't fill in the blank as to why we should abstain,
yeah.
Other than just don't.
Yeah.
Take cold showers, whatever. Yeah.
Right, right.
Okay. Yeah. Over here.
Go ahead. I just took it from him.
Good.
I just took it out of his hands.
Man. Cheater.
I'm sorry. So I don't usually branch out like this.
Wow, this is huge for you.
Yeah. Big step. So I just don't like how we're focusing on ourselves like this. I have this purity ring. I made this pledge. Blah, 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 blah. I've got this ring. I've got this abstinence card, which would be kind of weird if we did have cards like that. anyways. Don't look at my wallet, man. Don't look. Like, the point of the passage is, like, look beyond these outward things and look at the heart. Like, when we take in mind how often we're like, it's me doing this, it's all on me. Like, I can abstain 9 times out of 10, but that one time where it's like, I don't know, man. how much time we got? Yeah. Like, And I don't abstain. And I feel terrible after that. But, so I feel like, oh, well, my purity ring didn't work. Darn it. Still, the focus is on me. It's I'm doing this. I'm abstaining or I'm not. And we're not allowing God or Jesus to be Lord over this. Like,
right.
We're like, oh, Jesus is Lord of all. Like, but we need to actually believe that Jesus can actually be Lord over this, over sex. That's where we're like, oh, we're sex in church. We can't talk about, like, because we're like, oh, we just got to let go and let Jesus transform the heart. That's what the whole passage is about, of transformation of the heart. You can cut your hands off. You can be a monk. You can go be a desert father. But if you're trying to control your own heart, you're going to fail because we're still sinful.
Right.
That's where we need to let go and let Jesus be Lord over that. And so that's why I think purity rings, abstinence cards, pledges, praying with my girlfriend about how we're not going to do stuff. Like,
usually that turns into kissing, but okay.
Yeah, crying, crying, kissing, and cuddling. That's all it leads to. So, yeah, it's okay.
No, but no, let's stop here for a minute. This is great stuff, right? Because even the term, can we get that verse back up here? Because when Jesus goes on that big rampage on, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. You can go ahead and have a seat or whatever. But if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it off. Your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. I mean, this is, some people have literally taken that literally. But we got to realize that, well, we know this. Okay, I'm going to go a little professorish on here. But there's no punctuation in Hebrew or Greek. So when we translate, we put these things in here. And the way that you stressed importance in Hebrew was to either poetically repeat things or to use, as Jesus often did, hyperbole, which is an extreme statement to make a point, because we didn't have like exclamation points. And so we all know that Jesus isn't literally saying, hey, if something causes you to sin, cut it off, or we would have a bunch of eunuchs here in the room, you know. The issue here is, because I know a friend of mine who's blind, who struggles with lust. I mean, this idea of desiring something that can't be his. So we know that even cutting those things off, you know, our hand or whatever, because what Jesus is saying, any part of our senses, our taste, our sight, our hearing, our smell, our touch, any part of our senses that is leading us to a place that we are looking to take something that isn't ours with the intent of, then that becomes a sin. And he is getting to this idea of the heart. And that's probably where the church has mostly failed, that we haven't really talked much about the sex as being sacred, what we really want marriage to be. You know, all we've said is, well, we know what premarital sex does, but we never talk about what we really want marriage to be. And I don't know, I want, what we're trying to do here is at the end, I do want to give each of us a chance to say one thing that we could leave here with that would be kind of important. But let me ask this, any comments either you want to make before I ask you that last question in regards
no,
to...
I want to comment, I'm just going to tie them together. It's
okay.
It's time to go here. So we'll wrap it up. I love Jesse, for one thing, but I love what you said.
Yeah.
The thing that strikes me, well, first of all, can I just say, no one knows why it's not working. I don't claim to know why this thing isn't working in the church. But if it makes us feel better, most things aren't working. We're also really mean, and we're selfish, and we're judgmental, and we're hypocritical, and we're on and on and on it goes. So most things aren't working. Sex happens to be another one of them that isn't working. And that is a big question. Why? I mean, why doesn't any of this really seem to work? And I love what Jason said, too. To me, you look at all of these words from Jesus. We don't have a ton, but we have a pretty good amount of a guy who lived 30 years. And the only thing Jesus said on sexuality is basically this. That's it. Which is kind of random and gray and about adultery. I mean, this is it. So I can conclude Jesus really didn't care that much, or Jesus thought other things were more important. And I think, I love what Jesse said. I mean, sexuality is not remaining a virgin until you're married. That's a good thing. But what happens is the church ends up, even best case, creating a couple who remained virgins until they're married, and they're jerks. And I don't think God goes, yeah, all right, good job, awesome. God goes, wait, whoa, no, this is way bigger than that. And so even as I raise children, and I've thought a lot about this week, actually, me and my wife had good conversations. I mean, as I raise children, am I falling into that trap of I'm always focusing on the sexuality instead of the soul? Because I think Jesus said, I'm way more worried about people who are just generous, forgiving, contemplative, prayerful people who have healthy souls. And when you have a healthy soul, stuff is going to emanate from that, which are all of the things that we're wanting to do here, including sexuality. And the problem is we're just trying to band-aid the sexual thing. So not like we shouldn't talk about it, but even in looking at my own kids, how often around the dinner table do I say, hey, what about that girl? What about that guy? Or, hey, let's just focus on where's your soul at? Where is your heart at with Jesus? Because that stuff's going to come from there. So again, I don't know what's wrong, but I do think we have this tendency to focus on the external, even as we know we shouldn't, and we forget to create that internal soul.
But I love what you said, but here's the challenge. I mean, if you're a parent, and I think...
Hey, I am one.
I know you are, but here's the issue. The reason it comes up is because everything in our society points to it all the time. I think that's part of the danger, right? I mean, I love what you're saying, that we should focus on other parts of our heart and our giving and humility and all these other things, but that our society, you can't... I mean, somebody said to me, the average teenager faces more temptation at 7 a.m. in the morning riding the school bus to school in the morning than their grandfather did out on a Friday night looking for it. You know, I mean... Well, that's the reality of this sexualized culture we're living in. I'll just say this. I had a whole other thing. I'll just say, I think one part of this is, as parents, it's so important that we have a lot of young families here. And that's why, to me, we live in an impatient society where basically it used to be that the disciplines and the spiritual virtues were things that were meant to kind of hold things until you were ready for them, and they would allow you to kind of control these things until the proper time. We live in a culture that we are an experiential culture. All we express ourselves. To not express yourself is kind of not being who you are. And boy, if we need anything in our culture, we need parents who understand, even as a two-year-old or whatever, that you say no, that you don't give a cell phone too early. I mean, we can have long talks about this. You don't date in junior high. There are certain things you put off, because we need to teach children, I think, to wait and to understand that in waiting, something beautiful, it kind of emerges. Because what happens is we have this group of kids who grew up thinking in our consumeristic culture that I can do anything I want at the flip of a switch, buy anything to help, fill this need. And I think as parents, it's a tough chore we have to try to do this. Yes. Yeah. Right.
So realizing that being intimate with them and enjoying that wonderful pleasure, you might be with that person forever, and it might not be the right connection. So if you talk about it and say, having sex at a young age, you might be stuck with this person forever.
Right.
Rather than it being, like Daylene said, it was bad. It was shunned.
Right, right.
And it's okay to talk about.
I mean, you're saying that we probably, even as families, need to be more open about talking about what this is and how it does connect and how it does take it to another place.
And I try to be as honest as possible about everything. I try not to... I'm very forward, I'm very blunt, and, little Aaron is definitely knows the penis and the vagina and what they do.
I love that we just said that in church. That's awesome. Go ahead.
Hey, wait, one second. If you need to go get your kids, you should go get them. And then it's a branch out, so we might go a little bit long if you don't need to get your kids. Because there are a couple of things I think Jason should speak, but I also want to defend myself one second. I talk to our kids a lot about sex. I don't want to imply that we shouldn't, but what I do want to imply is that healthy sexuality is not remaining a virgin until you're married and done deal. Healthy sexuality, I fight just as much as a married man as I did before I was married. It's not as though you get to marriage, and I think it's a fault of the church. Kid, just wait, just remain a virgin. Yes, they did it. It's done. We're good kids. Great. No, God, I don't think God looks at that. I mean, this sexual thing is the entire body. It's our soul. It's our heart. And it's talking about all of those things with the kids. That's all I wanted to say to defend myself. Ryan said you don't talk to your kids about sex. Okay, sorry. Jason.
I'm kind of itching at the bit, but I also know that we're running over. I'm just going to say this. There are two great things that that were in reference to the question that you asked, and one was brought up with sin. The young lady brought up the idea of sin and how, sorry, I guess, I'm so used to speaking and yelling into these things, but you had brought up the idea of sin, and then Jesse brought up this idea of the heart. I really believe this, that our failure has been that we haven't spoken honestly. And when we've spoken of it, we've spoken of the sin. We've always stopped at the don't. We've always spoken into the restrictions, the negatives. And honestly, Scripture, when I read it, is one of celebration, of one of joy, of one of that looks at the, yes, the marriage covenant, but it points to something so much larger than that. And that's why I think that in this passage that we looked at today, it's so important for us to be looking at the heart. My personal opinion on some of the failures of what's happened have been because we haven't given reason to the why it's important to wait. We've given pledge cards and we've said, do this, do this, do this, and you'll make it to marriage and it's going to be the best sex you've ever had. Now, I know a lot of people that have done that and had the worst sex ever. It's true. And I really think this, there are a lot of young men and women in here that are single and some of us that have heard this message. It's one of the most beautiful messages that we can hear, but I really believe this, that if we're going to hold on to something like this, it has to be something inside. It has to be something that comes from within that causes us to essentially act in obedience. I really believe, and I know from my own personal experience, where this became a reality in my life was when I was truly pursuing Jesus Christ, where Christ was at the center of my life, and that as an act of obedience, I chose to live in a particular way. Purity so often, honestly, when I was growing up, I heard the word purity and I wanted to puke. It was always associated with dandelions and sunflowers for some reason. And I always have thought that it's more about what I didn't do rather than who I served. So often the conversation on sexual purity, I don't need to include Christ in that conversation. And I really believe that when I include Christ in the conversation, there is an act of sanctification, of purification that happens, and that I can celebrate my story no matter what has happened. Mm-hmm. And that because of my belief in him and the manifestation of Christ in my life, I begin to act in a particular way. And I really believe that. My heart is one that we would choose to walk and engage in honest conversations of sex and sexuality and relationship, where we remove some of the pain, hurt, shame that's in it, and I really start stepping into something that is beautiful and that allows for us to, as a community, begin dialoguing around this subject because it brings healing.
Yeah. You know, we talked about this thing. This is a huge topic, and we probably need to come back to it because we just opened maybe a can of worms because we haven't even talked about how do we understand sexuality and singleness. I mean, this is a big issue. So the church has done a poor job about that as well. So probably it'd be great to have all the single people get together and talk about that some night. But I hope that this has opened your heart up to think about what Jesus is really getting at in this statement. That our hearts, if they're not in tune with him and desiring to follow him, can lead us down some pretty wild roads if we're not careful in this area. And the church has not done a good job. Let me pray, and we'll dismiss you. Lord, well, maybe the greatest thing about this whole service is that we've actually talked about this. We actually brought this up in worship. Lord, that's profound in and of itself. And all the messiness of it, and all the beauty of it, and all the confusion of it, natural desire and when it becomes love, all the things, what it means to be single, what it means to have adolescence extended. How do we live this out in a sexually charged culture? Lord, have mercy on us as we try to live out what you know and have created to be the best. That sex is to happen in marriage with children. And it's so much bigger than just one night stands. Help us, Lord. We love you. In your name, amen. Have a great week.